Right to work found unconstitutional. Will the ruling stand? The governor in Japan, Dan Coats on Syria, and Michael Clater for state auditor. That plus the rehabilitation of the House chamber, Roger Brown, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 13, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, unions won a big battle in the fight over the right to work law. A Lake County judge gave union members the victory that rallies and marches failed to provide during last year's fight in the General Assembly. Judge John Cedia ruled the law is unconstitutional, but it will remain in place pending appeals. Union members won't give up no matter what the court finds.
That's not an option. We are going to continue to fight this, and if it takes 5 years or 10 years, this will be repealed.
We had some very smart lawyers look at this when the bill was drafted, and this question was vetted, and I feel fairly secure in the language we have in the bill.
Will the Lake County ruling stand up? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Tim Berry, is that a solid ruling?
No, I don't think it is at all. The Lake County judge that cited this basically cited an area of the law that deals traditionally with individuals, and I think it will be a stretch for the Supreme Court when Zeller appeals this to apply that area to unions that has traditionally applied to individuals.
Okay. Greg Zeller, the Attorney General, has already filed the appeal.
Correct.
But what he said was the unions can't perform services without being paid. He's also a judge who was appointed by Mitch Daniels.
But elected in Democrat stronghold Lake County.
So the appointment doesn't count, apparently.
Yeah, he maybe needs to be reelected. I mean, could...
Does
the fact that this was Lake County have anything to do with the outcome?
No, it's the Indiana Constitution as opposed to any other constitution. And it's interesting that they don't want labor unions to be people. They were very happy to have corporations be people. And I'd like to see how the U.S. Supreme Court's going to distinguish, oh, yeah, a corporation's a person, but a labor union isn't. This is all about greed. This is all what it's always been about. Because when labor unions are strong, the middle class grows, and it grows in power, and it grows in money. When unions were strong in the 1950s, the average CEO made 25 times what the employee made. Now it's 250 times, and that's not enough for them. This is about breaking unions and the middle class. That's all it's about.
There's another interesting fact here. The union that brought this lawsuit is the Operating Engineers Union. They're also the folks who created the lunch pail Republicans. They're led by a Republican.
You know, I think that it's an interesting set of dynamics that are involved. I'm not sure what the courts will do on appeal, but I don't think that the first appeal will be the last appeal. I think that it may go a long ways, as Ann indicates.
But it's the state constitution. It can't really go past the state Supreme Court.
It can go to the state Supreme Court, and, you know, we'll see what happens with it. I know Representative Torr is very confident that it'll pass muster. You know, Tim is too, and I understand that. But it's an interesting set of circumstances. The ones that you raised, are salient here. The fact that it's Lake County, but this is not an unexpected challenge, and I think it's going to be an interesting... I'm planning to go watch the arguments when the Court of Appeals has its hearing.
Yeah. for what it's worth, Zeller has appealed directly to the Supreme Court. He hasn't been told yet whether they will take it or not. There was a federal lawsuit filed that they already lost the case on. So this, it appears this is going to be a state court fight.
Oh, I think that's right. But again, the provision, there were five issues that the union in this particular case that dealt with state law, five issues that were brought up and raised in the litigation. And the judge out of Lake County dispensed with four of them, but said that this is valid based on the state constitution. And that's why there's so much litigation, because keep in mind, this is not the only state where right to work issues are unfolding. There's court battles going on in Michigan right now, for instance, and other states. But the place where the unions have gotten any traction, and they haven't gotten a lot because they've been pretty hungry for some good news out of the halls and corridors of their state houses, it's been as it relates to state law and state statute.
Right. Because it's a different constitution.
It is a different constitution. That's why certainly I think John's right that there will be a never-ending stream of legislation as people look for different angles to pursue this.
What the union people will tell you is that there was a right-to-work law passed in 57.
Right, and it was
repealed in 64. That was a seven-year-long battle.
Right, and they'll do it again, and they'll get it repealed again, because it's all about the war the Republican Party has waged, not only against women, but against the middle class.
You know, what would really be sad here, though, is while it's under appeal, if a business chooses not to expand in Indiana because of this situation and the opportunity to provide good wages to Hoosier families.
Yeah, give me a break on that. You passed this last year, okay, and we're still considerably above the national average on unemployment. This isn't about jobs. It's about greed.
It's about jobs and building a strong economy.
Well, I wonder if that becomes an issue, a moot issue at some point, because so many states have used the same argument in enacting various forms of right-to-work legislation. At what point does it basically just level the playing field
and you look for some other...
jobs
aren't coming here, and the income, by the way, under your war on labor, is going down.
But if they start going to a right-to-work state and not here to Indiana because of that, that would be an issue.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will the right-to-work ruling be overturned? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, should Indiana expand Medicaid coverage? 34% said yes, 61% said no, 5% said, let's see if it works in other states first. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Now to that sales pitch. Governor Mike Pence reports that a Japanese auto supplier is bringing new jobs to the Lafayette area. The governor is in Japan on a 10-day trade mission and spoke with us in a Skype interview. Pence says that he was informed of expansion plans that may include hundreds of jobs by the parent company of Heartland Automotive. He also reacted to the ruling this week that found the right-to-work law unconstitutional.
The fact that Indiana was the first right-to-work state in the Midwest is an important selling point for Indiana. And I'm very confident that the statute that was enacted is on a sound legal foundation.
And Delaney, is right-to-work a big factor in foreign trade?
No, it's not. And you can see that because, for example, Tennessee. In Tennessee, there are now a foreign manufacturer of automobiles has said that the UAW doesn't even have to have a referendum on whether or not to establish a union. They're willing to do it. So it's not only a big factor, it's a non-factor. This is not about creating jobs. It's about plain and simple corporate greed. I'm glad they're doing an expansion here. Don't get me wrong on that. I find it ironic that Mike Pence is talking about automotive expansion when he wasn't with the automotive industry, he would rather have them go bankrupt. But it's good they're coming.
Mike Pence did say that his sales pitch won't change because of this ruling.
No, because the judge did rule that while it is under appeal, the right-to-work law continues to be in effect. And we're very confident that the Supreme Court will ultimately rule in our favor. But at the same time, you know, the governor's out selling the state of Indiana and the great story we have to tell in the state of Indiana.
One of the things he
did, CEO, you can make a killing.
He paid a visit to the parent company of Heartland Automotive, and he planted a tree there next to a tree that Bob Orr planted in 1987 that is now something like 30 or 40 feet tall. And it really does kind of symbolize what's going on with Indiana and the relationship with Japanese companies.
Oh, clearly. You go back to the 80s. I remember John and I used to sit side by side at the Columbus Republic in Columbus, Indiana, in the newspaper, and probably a week didn't go by when one of us was covering some groundbreaking for another Asian auto parts manufacturer or some other component producer. And that was, again, hard to believe, but a while ago. And that, and there is, I think the administrations that helped nurture that deserve a lot of credit, because you look at the long list of companies that settled here in the years since. I don't think they were drawn necessarily by right to work being right, because it wasn't a right to work state. So there must be something other that was going on there, and I think it was the relationships that were built by the Orr administration and those that followed.
And continued by the Biden administration.
Yeah. Tough to judge trade missions as they happen, but does this one appear to be successful?
Well, they did a nice job of making sure that they'd have news to report when they were
even though it's tied to a Subaru expansion that was announced several weeks ago.
Right? Yeah, it's interesting how they might have been able to determine before they left for Japan that there would be an announcement by a supplier to that Subaru plant. Look, it's a good thing, but this is the broken record alert, okay? The relationships that were developed by previous administrations and have continued to be nurtured are very valuable. But the fact is, Japanese and other manufacturers come here because the workforce understands the work, gets the work done well, and it's an efficient place for them to conduct business, all right? I think that this administration, after having its training wheels taken off in Japan, needs to find other locales in Asia and throughout Europe to practice its preaching and hopefully bring more international investment to Indiana.
I did ask the governor how often he planned to go back to Japan. Mitch Daniels did pretty much on an annual basis, and he said that hasn't been determined yet.
I think it's nice to visit Japan. I think it's better if he gets out and visits some new locales.
Like China.
China.
Senator Dan Coats announced this week that he can't support an attack on Syria. It's the same position taken by two Indiana members of Congress, Jackie Walorski and Larry Bouchon. Coats announced his decision after he made this floor speech.
The people of Indiana do not see that American policy and action has attained meaningful results in the Middle East. Instead, they see a region of continuing and increasing violence, chaos, and disintegration. They are war-weary, and they are discouraged that after more than a decade of wars that have not produced the desired outcomes, we perhaps are about to engage in a third.
John Ketzenberger, is Dan Coats becoming a leader on this issue?
Well, he hasn't been afraid to state his position on this issue, and to the extent that he's been very visible, I think it's true. I think he's reflecting the feeling that a lot of people in America have about this, and you know, I think that the last week has been really incredible to watch unfold. So good for him for paying attention to what people are saying and then being willing to put himself out there on the issue.
I think it's interesting. If you count the members of Congress and the Senate, Indiana has 11. Four of them have taken a position. Coats, Bouchon, Walorski, and Luke Messer, who said he would support an attack on Syria. Messer had reason to do that because he's on the Foreign Affairs Committee. These other people, would they be better to wait?
Not necessarily, and I'm not sure they necessarily can wait. I think there was such a clamor for, on the part of the media and constituents, to know where their elected officials stood on this issue that a lot of them felt compelled, I think, to, if not give it definitive promises to how he or she might vote, they still wanted to, felt compelled to share their feelings. So I think some of that was going on. And in Dan Coats' case, he's not on Foreign Affairs, but he is on Senate Intelligence Committee. Right. So, I mean, that's not as if, presumably, Senate Intelligence is still focused on international, and we haven't gotten to the point that Senate Intelligence is focused on internal right. intelligence, or I guess we have another issue that would create another show or two or three. So It's not as if he's divorced from the issue. Yeah.
Tim Berry, if you were advising a member of Congress, would you say that it's good to get out front on this or not?
Well, right now, we don't know where the president is on it. You know, first he said he was for it and he was going to authorize an attack. Then he said, let's go to Congress and ask them to do it. Then Tuesday, when we thought we were going to hear definitively what he wanted to do and why and outline that for America, he kind of took a step back and said, well, now let's wait and don't take a vote, Congress.
All of that argues in favor of being undecided if you're a member of Congress.
Well,
right?
What really is sad is we're hearing on the pages of the New York Times from Vladimir Putin about what we should be doing. And that's not exactly where we should be lectured from.
Well, yeah, obviously, it's not newsworthy that Dan Coats is a naysayer. I'm just surprised he knows what people in Indiana think since he spends so little time here.
I believe he lives in Carmel.
Yeah, and how often has he frequented Carmel since he's been elected? But, you know, that issue aside, it would have been better to wait, because actually I think the president's played this pretty well. Because exactly what we wanted to have happen is to have those weapons of chemical weapons taken out of play, and by putting it out there and saying he was going to do it and scheduling a vote, all of a sudden Russia goes in and starts putting pressure. If that works without a shot being fired, that's a Class A victory.
Still a big if.
It's all if.
The November 2014 election is a long way off, but a candidate for state auditor is getting an early start. Democrat Michael Clater kicked off his campaign this week. Clater is a retired CPA who spent most of his career in state government, where he was a lead examiner at the State Board of Accounts. Republican Dwayne Sawyer was recently appointed to fill out the term of departed state auditor Tim Berry. A Sawyer-Clater matchup is likely in 2014.
You know, the auditor of state is the chief financial officer, and I believe we ought to have someone in that office that's a CPA or financially qualified to be able to perform those responsibilities.
John Schwanes, is Dwayne Sawyer vulnerable?
I've concluded over the years that anybody is vulnerable. You never know how issues are going to break. You never know what issues will drive voters to the polls. They may not be focused on the auditor's race, but they're going because of economic issues or international. So anything's possible. Clearly, Dwayne Sawyer doesn't have the name ID or the profile that his predecessor, who sits right across from me here, had. Will he be able to gain that in the next, 14 months? Maybe, maybe not. It'll be an interesting race, though.
This is very unusual from one perspective, though. The Democrats have not made a serious effort at winning the auditor or treasurer in recent years. And to have a candidate out here the year before actually raising money and getting around the state is new and different.
Well, it's new and different because now they have somebody who's new and different in that office. And so I think they sense an opportunity. And, it's a great thing for the whole representative democracy for both parties to be fully engaged. So I take your point exactly, Jim, and I'm glad that it's not the case this time.
Yet a Democrat hasn't been elected state auditor since 1982.
Yeah, so maybe it's time, huh? Mike Clater is eminently qualified. I mean, not just the CPA after his name, but also his experience with the State Board of Accounts. He can count. He can obviously inform both the budget agency and how much money is on hand, which seems to have been an issue in the state of Indiana in recent years. And I'm personally delighted that he's running. I think he's going to be a very, very good candidate.
And Tim Berry, in his new role as state GOP chairman, went on the attack immediately. You're bothered by the fact that he's been registered to vote in Florida.
Not just registered to vote, he's voted in Florida, and I'm not sure he can count in. He said he was down there for 3 years, yet he voted in Florida since 2008 through the 2012 election. So
but he's an Indiana native. He's worked in state government. He came back here. I mean, you challenging his residency?
Just like Dan Coats?
What I'm saying is he's been voting in down in Florida. And maybe that Florida sun has influenced him a little bit.
Okay, so we had the same thing with McIntosh, and then we had the same thing with Dan Coats, and everybody said, oh, it's not an issue, it's not an issue. You should do your history homework before you attack.
But it is an issue, which it would suggest to me that, maybe you're worried that Dwayne Sawyer is vulnerable.
I don't think Dwayne's at all vulnerable. Dwayne has a computer science degree from Purdue. He's worked in the private sector with vital private sector experience, working on the same financial systems that state government works and operates in the state auditor's office. Local government budgetary experience, leading the town council in Brownsburg. I think Dwayne's going to use the next 14 months to prove to the voters he deserves a full term.
Well, in the same town council in Brownsburg where I think if he stood for re-election, he'd have a hard time getting re-elected.
Well,
yeah,
we're not going to find that out.
No.
The House chamber in the Indiana State House is currently a construction zone. Work is underway on a $750,000 renovation that GOP leaders defended during state budget discussions earlier in the year. It's being combined with a $150,000 technology upgrade that comes out of the budget for the nonpartisan legislative services agency. The upgrade includes a digital voting machine and software that will reduce the use of paper by state lawmakers.
You never get rid of paper entirely. It's paper on demand as opposed to conditioning your actions on paper.
That's George Angelone of the Legislative Services Agency. Ann Delaney, did House leaders do a bit of a bait and switch here?
Oh, you mean when they attacked Glenda Ritz for the renovation in her office and then went and doubled the cost here? You mean that?
Well, I mean, this came into question because Brian Bosma questioned what Glenda Ritz did.
Right.
This popped up in the budget, and they said, well, it's all due to normal wear and tear, but...
It's not due to normal wear and tear, but I don't begrudge them that. I mean, I think it's time for an overhaul of that, and frankly, I don't think they should stop there. I think the committee rooms where they hold hearings are a disgrace to the state of Indiana, and they have all the seats reserved for the lobbyists that are controlling whatever people are on the committee there, and the public can't get in there. The ventilation's terrible. You can't even identify who the legislators are, and they call each other by first name. It's very consumer and citizen unfriendly, and it ought to be renovated, too.
Well, I think what this does is not just help the legislators. It helps the public because things are going to get to the Internet quicker. They're going to have video screens out in the hallway. I don't think you can question the money that's being spent here. The question is, why aren't they upfront about it then?
Well, I think they were upfront about it. Is the budget that LSA is paying to update the systems. The chandelier was being held together by zip ties. Certainly, we didn't want something to happen there. Was necessary.
I don't think anybody did. For the taxpayers don't want the liability, I don't think, for one thing.
Nobody wants it.
It's highly utilized, not only by the legislature, their staff, but the many school groups that go through that building every day.
I don't think, Hoosiers don't want a palace, but at the same time, they want to be proud of their state house. And
this is not Illinois where they're spending $800,000
right.
on doors.
But I also remember what the state house looked like, as I'm sure many of you do, before the renovation in the 80s with the battleship gray plywood sort of lean-tos on some of the floors. I'm glad that's changed and the technology doesn't seem overly extravagant in an era when people are largely going paperless.
And that's fine. And having it on the Internet's fine. I don't like the fact that they withdraw it from the Internet after a period of time. When somebody says something really stupid, it ought to be on there for people to find.
I think the lesson here is it's probably best to hold fire if you know you're going to go spending money, and then you avoid the problem. Because there would be really no question about the need for this. But it keeps being an issue because
you're
they
saying
made
if Brian
issue,
Bosma hadn't questioned Glenda Ritz,
then this wouldn't
would
be an issue
this.
Right now.
I think that's probably true. And actually, in terms of state government finances, it's a good time to spend the money.
That's true too. And so there really would be no question if they hadn't questioned Glenda Ritz's renovation.
You think Glenda Ritz's renovation was a good idea?
Sure, why not? In fact, they can come over and do my office if they want to next.
Okay. Finally, former Indiana Pacer and basketball legend Roger Brown was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame this week. Pacer Hall of Famers Reggie Miller and Mel Daniels presented Brown for induction. His daughter Gail and son Roger Jr. represented their father on stage. Brown died from cancer in 1997. He was the first player in the Pacers organization that was ever signed, and he helped lead them to three ABA championships. Still not in the Hall of Fame as the coach in that era, Slick Leonard, Tim Berry. Is that an injustice?
Well, I got to tell you, Roger Brown was both smart and talented. Not only did he perform on the basketball floor, but he performed in the halls of the Indianapolis City County Council as a Republican member of the City County Council. I think Slick's probably been overlooked and probably deserves it.
Will he continue to be overlooked?
No, I think I hope he'll get in. He ought to get in. And
he gets in before he passes.
After the fact.
And the whole thing is
boom, baby.
Just a reminder of what a rich tradition Indianapolis has with the Pacers and how important it was to the city when not much else was going on in the 70s. And it brings back good memories looking at that video.
That's right. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.